Okay. Good evening, folks. QST, this is Bruce, KK5DO. It is once again time for another edition of the Houston AmSat Net. This net meets on Tuesdays to discuss topics related to satellites, balloons, and other amateur-related items. This is net number 1661, and it's 8 p.m. Central Time on Tuesday, April 28th, 2026, which in UTC time is Wednesday, April 29, 2026, at 0100 UTC. So, again, this net is only being heard on Echolink and our normal streaming service, as I cannot reach the repeater from my house. And you may have noticed that my audio sounds a whole lot better. I spent an entire $79 for an articulating arm and a new microphone, and it looks like it's going to be doing the job. So, let's kind of jump right in it. And there's, where is it? Here we go. This is from Walter. So, K5WH, thank you for providing it. Sven, AF5LI, is currently redesigning the infamous Picon tracker that supports the camera we have flown many times. He's almost finished with it, and it should be off to the fab company for PC board build and component stuffing by next week. A couple of highlights of the new board will be slightly smaller and be a tri-band tracker capable of VHF, UHF, and 2.4 gig. With the ability to have VHF packet, UHF LoRa packet, and the 2.4 gig is yet to be determined, with onboard receiver capability as well to capture the stations it's receiving and send out the list in the data stream. So there'll be much more to come on that, and additional sensors are being explored as well. So that's kind of neat. I can remember when my daughter was about 12 or 13 years old, and we went down to one of the balloon launches down towards El Campo, and she got to watch them launch a balloon. Now she's in her mid-30s, so they've been doing these for a long time. Over on Echolink, we've got a few people that have joined in there. AD0HJ, that's Mitch. N6UTC, Endoff, always there from Long Beach. KE2FEB, Roz. AG9P, Damien. KA5YFC, Steve. N8SGZ, David. And KC5LWY, Andrew, down in Galveston. So, we're cruising right along here. And thank you all for joining us. Those joining over on our other stream, thank you as well. And the net will be available on my webpage after the net, so you can always listen to the Memorex version, or you can go over to Apple Podcasts, and you'll find us up there. Just do a search on AmSatNet or AmSat or KK5DO, and you should be able to find it. So, we've got a few satellites that got launched. Some of the new ones, the Magnaro 2 Pisces, it's got a new object number. It's 68798, because when these things get launched and they get shot out of the launcher, they're very close together, and NORAD can't determine which one is which. So, after a little bit of orbiting, they start to separate, and then the operators of the satellite can determine which one is actually theirs. Erica 2 is object 68796. FSI SAT 2 is object 68792. And was this Waseda SAT 0 number 2 is object 68797. And Origami Sat 2 is Object 68795. So those are all off of that one launch. Nico PA0DLO provided that information. So that's kind of nice. And let's jump over here to the AMSAT news service. So this week we've got a few things going on. AMSAT was over at the 2026 CubeSat Developers Workshop. And Drew, KO4MA, the president of AMSAT, he was a speaker, and the YouTube presentation in its entirety is located over there on YouTube. So you can jump over to the link that we've provided at amsatnet.com. And the presentation provides an overview of AMSAT's current satellite development programs and future mission plans, along with its ongoing efforts to support amateur radio in space. The recorded session offers those unable to attend the workshop an opportunity to review AMSAT's activities with the broader satellite community. The CubeSat Developers Workshop, held April 14th through the 16th at Cal Poly State University in San Luis Obispo, California, is an annual 3-day conference focused on small satellite development. Now, in its 23rd year, the workshop brings together participants from academia, industry, and government to share knowledge, research, and practical experience in CubeSat missions, with an emphasis on hands-on learning and collaboration. During his presentation, Drew provided an overview of AMSAT's mission as a volunteer educational organization dedicated to building and operating amateur radio satellites. He noted the organization's long history dating back to 1969 and highlighted the continued operation of early satellites such as AO7, which remains functional more than 5 decades after launch when illuminated by the sun. Drew then outlined AMSAT's current satellite development efforts, focusing on the Gulf T mission, a 3U CubeSat expected to be completed later this year or early next year. The satellite is designed to carry a 30 kHz linear transponder for amateur communications, along with a 10 GHz high-speed experimental downlink and improved 3-axis attitude control. He also described the follow-on Fox Plus series of CubeSats, which incorporate a mix of commercial hardware and AMSAT-developed radio payloads. Additional work includes AMSAT's development of linear transponder modules and other payloads designed for integration into university CubeSat missions. These systems allow partner institutions to use the hardware for mission communications while also providing access to amateur radio operators when not in use. Drew also highlighted educational initiatives such as the CubeSat Simulator and youth outreach programs aimed at expanding student participation in amateur satellite operations. Now, if you noticed, I mentioned a 3-axis attitude control. Now, that's very, very important right now. One of the things that the FCC has required is that satellites be able to deorbit should they become end of life. So how do you do that if you solely rely on gravity? Well, you got to wait maybe a long time for it to deorbit. So with 3-axis attitude control, they can turn the satellite to create more drag. More drag means it will lose altitude. After it loses enough altitude, it'll be grabbed by the Earth's atmosphere and be pulled back in. The other nice thing about a 3-axis attitude control is that you can always point your antennas at the Earth. That's called nadir pointing. That is a nice thing because then your signal is always good and strong and you don't have any fading. So there's a few benefits of that. So we'll see how that works out. Now, AMSAT HB, they had a contest going on, 2026 HB9RG Trophy Distance Competition. So this was on satellites, and it was who was going to have the furthest contact, VHF and UHF, and it's to honor Hans Rudolf Lauber, HB9RG, a pioneer in VHF and UHF communications and early satellite experimentation. The event challenges operators to achieve the greatest possible distances using amateur satellites in Earth orbit. Unlike traditional contests, scoring is based on the sum of each participant's 10 longest satellite QSOs rather than the total number of contacts. This format emphasizes technical skill, station optimization, and operating strategy. The results shown in the table reflect the combined distance of those 10 longest contacts for each operator. The 2026 competition drew participants from multiple countries across three operating categories. So here's what they had. Category 1, designed for portable handheld stations using WIP or telescopic antennas, had a single participant, and in that, DF2ET, who achieved a total distance of, let's do it in miles because of our audience, 5,542.43 miles. The operator recorded a maximum single contact of 1,145.19 miles. So that's pretty good with handheld. Okay, so now we have Category 2, which includes portable and more capable stations. KE9AJ placed first with a total distance of 44,472.62 miles, followed by VU3FYD and VA3VGR. The longest single contact in this category was measured at 4,648.52 miles. That was between KE9AJ in Echo Lima 99 and F4AZF in Juliet November 39, and they did that over AO7. Of course, you have to get a higher orbit satellite if you want to get those longer distances. Some of the LEOs will not be able to do that. KE9AJ also recorded the highest average distance at 4,447.30 miles. Category 2 drew 10 participants from 7 countries. And as I looked at the list of portable WIP telescopic and portable stations, and then the fixed stations, they're all from across the pond, except VA3VGR and KE9AJ. Those are the only two that are on this side. So they had a lot more activity there. Of course, Category 3, oh, you know what? I need to pause this a minute. Okay, there we go. I just realized KK5DO might have gone a little bit more than the time limit. Sorry about that, guys. I'm not used to doing the net, so I kind of forgot. Maybe I'll go find myself a little timer that'll twinkle on the screen or something to remind me. So let me see here. I was talking about Category 3, and for the fixed stations, PA3GAN placed first, total distance of 41,262.68 miles, and the longest single contact reach was 4,459.41 miles. That was between PA3GAN and JO21, and again, KE9AJ and EL99 on AO7. So that's kind of cool. Across all categories, the results highlight the continued importance of linear transponder satellites such as AO7, FO29, and RS44 for long-distance QSOs. As I said, the LEOs, you're just not going to be able to make that distance. Their footprints are too small. These platforms enable many of the longest contacts recorded during the event. Operators demonstrated strong understanding of satellite passes, polarization effects, and station configuration. The competition also reinforced the value of portable operation in achieving unique grid combinations. Overall participation reflects a technically engaged satellite community. The HB9RG trophy remains a meaningful tribute to early satellite communication achievements while encouraging continued innovation and participation in amateur satellite operations. And you can go to amsatnet.com, and there's a link there to all the trophy and the results. So that's pretty cool. And if you're looking for those long-distance contacts, one of the main things to do that is you have to make your contact either at AOS, like instantly at AOS, or at LOS. And both stations need to be doing it at AOS and LOS. That's going to be the longest or the furthest that satellite is capable of hearing. So there's a little tip for you. Okay, let's see. I think we've got K9OIM that joined us over on EchoLink. So, Rocket Lab launches 8 JAXA satellites on Kakushin Rising Moon. Now, we did mention some of those satellites a bit ago, and they've got their ID number now. So, the satellites were launched at about 11:09 p.m. on April 22nd, and that was 3:09 UTC on April 23rd. From Rocket Lab's Launch Complex 1 in New Zealand. Mission carried a diverse set of small satellites designed to test new technologies and expand capabilities in low Earth orbit. The launch continues Rocket Lab's success cadence of dedicated small missions. A lot of things are going up in LEO. Of course, we know that Starlink and Elon Musk's satellites are all in LEO. And those re-enter all the time, and then new ones go up to replace them. The Electron rocket deployed all 8 spacecraft into low Earth orbit at an altitude of approximately 540 kilometers or 336 miles. Deployment occurred less than 1 hour after liftoff, in line with mission expectations. Rocket Lab confirmed successful separation of all payloads shortly after the event. The mission marked the 79th launch of the Electron launch vehicle. So that's pretty cool. Now, Kakushin Rising represents the second of 2 contracted launches for JAXA's technology demonstration program. The first mission, RAISE and SHINE, launched in December 2025 and carried the RAISE 4 satellite to orbit. Together, the missions highlight Japan's continued investment in rapid, cost-effective access to space for experimental payloads. These efforts support the deployment of new satellite technologies and operational concepts. And if you ever have a chance to go over to Tokyo, go over to JAXA or to Japan's version of ARRL and visit their office there. It's pretty neat. The first floor has a lot of the old-time satellites that didn't launch, you know, like the second version of them or whatever, and lots of neat radios. And then if you can get up onto their roof, you can see all the antennas that they have up there. Japan being so cluttered and everything close together, it's very interesting to see how they've optimized that on their roof. The 8 satellites on the mission included, we already mentioned them, Magnaro 2, Cosin 2R, Waseda Sat 0, the second, FSI Sat 2, Origami Sat 2, Erica 2, Mono Nico, and Prelude. Those two were not mentioned in that listing of the ID numbers. The payloads range from educational CubeSats to advanced technology demonstrators, including systems for remote sensing, communications, and deployable structures. One satellite features an antenna that can expand to many times its stowed size using origami-inspired techniques. These missions provide valuable on-orbit validation for emerging technologies. Several of the satellites are IARU coordinated, including Magnaro, Cosin, Waseda, Erica, with amateur radio downlinks in the VHF and UHF bands. Early reports from the SatNOGS network indicate that multiple satellites are already transmitting, with CW beacon signals received from Magnaro, Erica, Waseda, and FSI, as well as OrigamiSat. Within hours of launch, these initial receptions confirm successful early operations and provide immediate opportunities for amateur radio operators to monitor and decode signals. Rocket Lab's Electron rocket, a 59-foot tall launch vehicle, is designed to provide responsive and dedicated access to space for small payloads. The company continues to support commercial, government, and research missions with frequent launches. Rocket Lab also operates a suborbital variant known as HASTE for hypersonic testing applications. The Kakushin Rising mission further demonstrates the growing role of small launch providers in enabling international space missions. Here again, I've got two links up on the webpage to get more on their information. Okay, so Kraken RF Discovery Drive Rotator Campaign exceeds the $314,000 funding goal. So Kraken RF's, they designed a motorized azimuth elevation antenna rotor crowdfunding campaign, and it concluded successfully on crowd supply. The project raised $334,282, exceeding its $314,550 goal and reaching 106% funding with support from 254 backers. Discovery Drive is designed as a turnkey solution for satellite tracking using directional antennas such as dishes and Yagis. The unit arrives fully assembled and weatherproof, eliminating the need for mechanical assembly or custom controller integration. Setup consists of mounting the rotator to a mast or a tripod, applying 12-volt power, connecting via Wi-Fi or USB, and aligning the system to true north. The rotator supports a range of satellite operations, including polar orbiting weather satellites such as Meteor M2, MetOp, and Fengyun, as well as CubeSat and amateur radio satellite tracking. Kraken RF also highlighted additional experimental applications, including hydrogen line radio astronomy using compatible dish systems and software such as Stellarium. During the campaign, Kraken RF shared multiple updates detailing development progress, software compatibility, and community testing, including video demonstrations of the system tracking weather satellites and operating with directional antennas such as handheld Yagis. Discovery Drive integrates with commonly used satellite tracking software through a ROTCTL-compatible network interface, allowing automatic control from the applications such as SatDump, GPredict, Look4Sat. It also supports USB serial control using the EasyCom2 protocol via HamLib. While a browser-based web interface provides direct manual control and system configuration. Following the conclusion of the campaign, Discovery Drive is available for pre-order through CrowdSupply at a post-campaign price of $799. Kraken RF has indicated a manufacturing timeline of approximately 2 months, followed by an additional 1 or 2 months for fulfillment and delivery. So that sounds pretty good for possibly portable operations, even for your home. So let's move on down here. Aris News. Well, before we start that, last week I just about wrapped up the net at this point. So we're doing pretty good. We've added a little bit more time to the net. So, amateurs and others around the world may listen in on contacts between amateurs operating in schools and allowing students to interact with astronauts and cosmonauts aboard the International Space Station. Now remember, the downlink frequency is 145.800, and you can listen to that anywhere in the world. It's always the same. Uplink frequencies are different. So you can always tune in and listen as long as you're within their footprint. So recently they finished contacts with the University of Bordeaux. They did one with Diamond Harbor School in New Zealand. They did one with ASU Preparatory STEM Academy in Mesa, Arizona. And there's nothing upcoming. So they won't be doing anytime really soon. But they'll have more scheduled. Many times a school makes a last-minute decision to do a live stream or runs into a last-minute glitch requiring a change of the URL, but we at Aris may not get the URL in time for publication, so you can always check their website, live.aris.org, to see if a school is live streaming. As always, if there is an EVA or a docking, or an undocking, the Aris radios are turned off as part of the safety protocol. The cross-band repeater remains configured in the Columbus module, so you'll use 145.990 MHz up with a PL tone of 67 and 437.800 MHz down. If a crew member decides to pick up the microphone and turn up the volume, you may hear them on the air, so keep listening, as you never know when activity might occur. I always hear people trying to call NA1SS, and they'll call a few more times. But remember that the volume on the radios is not on. They've got it turned down. So if the astronaut or cosmonaut is so inclined to go over and turn up the volume, chances are they're going to operate, so there's really no need to call for them. The Kenwood D710GA in the Zvezda service module, call sign RS0ISS, please note we're still in the process of troubleshooting and testing this radio. Ham TV in the Columbus module is configured for scheduled digital amateur television operations on 2395 MHz. Note that all times are approximate. It is recommended that you do your own orbital prediction or start listening about 10 minutes before the listed time for those school contacts or the ham TV. And that way you'll catch one of the contacts or the picture. Okay, AMSAT Ambassador Activities. The AMSAT Ambassadors provide presentations, demonstrate communicating through amateur satellites, and host information tables at club meetings, hamfests, conventions, maker fairs, and other events. AMSAT Ambassador Clint Bradford, K6LCS, says, Think a 75-minute presentation on working the easy satellites would be appropriate for your club or event? Let me know by emailing him, and it's kclcsclint@gmail.com, or give him a call. Great phone number, 909-999-SATS, which is 7287. Clint's never given the exactly the same show twice. Each of his 150-plus presentations so far has been customized, tailored to their audience. And what he does is whoever asks him, or if he knows that one of the board members or someone else is at that club, he will make a funny. And he did one for our club, and he made a couple funnies about me, so that was kind of cool. Makes it interesting. That's why they're never the same. Now, there's a few scheduled events coming up. The Dayton Hamvention, May 15th through the 17th. Don't forget to stop by if you're in that area and visit the AMSAT booths. And then we've got the 44th Space Symposium, an annual membership meeting, October 8th through the 11th. Now, remember the 8th, and I think the morning of the 9th, or the board of directors meeting, and then the whatever that Friday, I think that 9th is a Friday. That is the start of the symposium and all the topics that will be discussed. And then it will go on through Saturday, and then Sunday morning there's a breakfast meeting where everybody can get together and talk about satellite things. And also, eyeball QSOs happen throughout the symposium. So please stop by and visit. Oh, yeah, I forgot to say, that's going to be at the Crowne Plaza JAX Airport in Jacksonville, Florida. So we're going back over to the East Coast. We were there 2 years ago for, not in Jacksonville, but in, we stayed at the DoubleTree. I forget the city. But we were over there in the Florida area. And let's see, satellite shorts. These are always really interesting. CelesTrak has reminded users that it transitioned to a nonprofit organization 5 years ago and moved its services to CelesTrak.org. So if you were using maybe CelesTrak.com, it's kind of time to switch your link. While requests to the legacy.com domain have been redirected since then, the SSL certificate for the .com site expired April 12, 2026. As a result, software or scripts still pointing to the .com domain may now fail or produce security warnings. Users are advised to update their configuration, use the .org. Yes, indeed, you try to go to some places that do not have an SSL. Even my personal webpage, I had to make amsatnet.com have an SSL. If you try to go to those, Firefox, Safari, all of them will say, this is an unsafe site. And then you have to click on advanced. And then advanced says, hey, this is an unsafe site because, and do you want to proceed? So after you do all these clicks, it lets you go there. So you can still go there, but it can't be done just by having a program tell it to go to HTTP and the URL. So make sure you keep that stuff updated. NASA engineers at Jet Propulsion Laboratory commanded Voyager 1 to shut down its low-energy charged particles experiment on April 17th in an effort to conserve dwindling power and extend the spacecraft's mission. The instrument had operated nearly continuously since launch in 1977, providing valuable measurements of ions, electrons, and cosmic rays in interstellar space beyond the heliosphere. Powered by a radioisotope, thermoelectric generator that loses about 4 watts per year, Voyager 1 now faces critically low power margins after nearly 5 decades in operation. A recent drop in power during a routine maneuver raised concern that the spacecraft's fault protection system could automatically shut down additional systems, prompting the team to act preemptively. 2 science instruments remain active, continuing to return unique data from a region of space no other spacecraft has reached. Engineers expect the shutdown to provide about a year of additional operation as they prepare further power-saving measures, including a planned system reconfiguration later this year. So that story came from NASA. That's pretty cool. Now, SpaceX, what are they up to? They've completed a full-duration static fire test of its next-generation Starship version 3 upper stage ahead of the vehicle's first flight. The test conducted on April 14th involved firing the engines while the rocket remained secured to the launch pad. In other words, we ain't going nowhere. Demonstrating readiness for upcoming operations, Starship Flight 12, targeted for early to mid-May, will be the first launch of the larger and more powerful version 3 configuration. When fully stacked, the vehicle stands about 408 feet tall and features upgraded Raptor engines capable of delivering a significantly greater performance. The new variant is designed to carry more than 100 tons to low Earth orbit, a substantial increase over the approximately 35-ton capacity of previous version 2. NASA is now preparing for its Artemis 3 mission, which will test docking operations in Earth orbit between the Orion spacecraft and one or more both contracted lunar landers, including Starship and Blue Origin's Blue Moon. So that story comes from Spacecom. Wow, 100 tons? I wonder if they could squeeze a few dozen LEOs, you know, CubeSats onto that. That would be really nice. And they'd probably not even notice them like flies on a wall. They'd be so little weight. So this week's ANS editor was Mitch, AD0HJ. So we thank him for compiling all that information for us. And remember, if you are a student, you can get a free membership at AMSAT as long as you're under the age of 25 and at least a half-time status in college, or, of course, you know, when you're in elementary school, middle schools, junior high schools, or high schools, you're probably there full-time, and you can enjoy all the benefits of AMSAT. And if you haven't been to BuzzSat, let's see, yeah, I think it's buzzsat.com. That's AMSAT's children's outreach, and it's got some pretty neat stuff on there. There's some neat classes on satellites and weather and things like that. So we're reaching out to the youngins, trying to get them excited about satellites. So what time do we have here? 8:38. Well, I've done pretty good. There was one thing I did want to say, if I can find it here real quick. I thought it was in my, in my inbox. Let's go there. Here it is. Here it is. Okay. So, you know, AMSAT's got the Getting Started in Amateur Satellites. It's a good book. You can get it digitally at amsat.org. And the ARRL, they have a book now. So theirs is Satellite Operating for Amateur Radio. And Tony K. KD8RTT guides you through making your first satellite contact, sharing practical tips and advice to build confidence. So, ready to go further? Dive into digital modes like FT8 and DMR, explore roving and award chasing, and learn techniques to elevate your satellite operating skills. So, ARRL is pushing operating satellites, which is great to increase the amount of users that get interested in this part of the hobby, which it's been fun for a long, long time for me, and I know a lot of people listening really enjoy satellites as well. I do miss the HEO satellites, such as AO-10 and AO-13 and AO-40. But, you know, we'll see someday if we can get something else up there, maybe into a MEO orbit or even a stationary orbit. You never know. Sometimes things happen and they just happen. So with that, and I don't have any further check-ins over on Echolink, I'm going to call it a night. Hope you enjoyed it, and we'll be back next week for another edition of the Houston AmSatNet. 73, this is KK5DO.